guys, once again, it is time for the Professional Goblins Podcast. I'm one of your wonderful hosts, Scott Gladstein, who has a super static picture today. With me, as always, is...
Mike Myler. Hi, everybody. How you doing?
And I'm Savannah, possibly to be joined by my co-host, Pelly the Cockatiel. For now, you'll have to make do with Hadrian the Beta Fish.
Ah, fantastic.
And he's not real talkative, but he looks pretty.
And we have this guy, I think his name is Hergen, but in the native tongue, Hergen is known as Stephen Rowe, producer nice over at Wright Publishing. Beyond that, Hergen, or Stephen, as we shall be calling you from now on, who are you? Why do they care? What is your passion? What is your problem? What is that itch you have?
Well, I am a writer, designer, a developer, editor for Pathfinder and 5th Edition, mostly Pathfinder. As you said, I'm the project manager over at Wright Publishing, and they're a lead developer in charge of their Pathfinder line, also kind of sliding over into the 5th Edition line as well. I am, in addition to that, a father, a husband, and I am a civil engineer. So, you know, lots of
hats. You wear all the hats, yeah. One of them hopefully being a construction one. So, it's been a little bit, guys. We had some shuffling and some moving. I know Mike and Savannah trudged on without me last week, so now you get to see my beautiful, static, non-loving face.
Is that a New York picture?
No, that's actually from like way back when.
Way back when? Okay. Yeah.
But, see, until I get to actually see your face, Scott, I'm going to assume that you're a robot.
That is definitely true.
Hello, Skynet.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, who knew that Skynet was a nerd? I mean, come on.
You speak in a Russian accent?
No. The Russian accent thing is broken.
Oh.
So I think our first segment, we're not doing the reviews unless... Hey, Steven, send us something to review that isn't super long.
Okay.
Yes.
For anyone who is just watching the show for the first time, we do a formatted show that typically begins with a review if somebody sends us stuff to review. But we didn't have anything because we didn't have a guest last week. So,
when you say isn't super long, like, can you give me a framework of what that actually means?
30, 40 pages.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it will not be, of course, reviewed by us, as that would be unprofessional. It will be reviewed by several anonymous people who may or may not be wearing a horse head mask and other accessories.
Yes. Any resemblance is purely coincidental.
Because that would not be professional for us to critique our honored guests' work.
Well, if they're not around, you're really just talking behind their back, and I feel like that's totally okay.
No, that's legit. That's legit.
So, Mike was saying, we got the formatted show. And I think the first section we're going to tackle today is going to be gaming stories.
Woohoo! Favorite part.
So, does anyone want? This is either a story from a game that you're currently playing, or a story about a lesson you've learned as a GM or a player or something. And Mike, I love the holy glow you have upon your face right now.
It's very deific.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mike, you're glowing. You're positively glowing.
I'm not.
I mean, are you expecting? Are you not telling us something?
Stephanie just gave me some extra baguette, and so I'm a little bit happy about that, but I mean...
Baguette. It's
clearly magic item, glowing baguette.
Got it.
Absolutely.
Headcanon accept.
So speaking of accepting headcanons, does anyone have a story they'd like to share with, start us off with?
I like Steven.
Steven, you've been
I'm happy to go. All right. I'm actually not in or running a game right now, which is super disappointing for me. But about 4 months ago, I wrapped up an Out of the Abyss 5th Edition game that I was running. And what my favorite player character in that game was named Red. And he was an extra planar pirate. That's how he started off his career.
I love it.
On board a ship that just kind of basically just did a bunch of smuggling runs through all the various planes. But, you know, they got into all these misadventures, and usually what they do is just run away because they could, you know, plane jump with their ship. So there really wasn't a whole lot of need to stick around and fight it out. But, you know, after the captain retired, took the ship with him, Red and his, the first mate named Gnarly Bob decided to start their own road show, like a traveling performance show based on all of the misadventures of the ship that they'd been on. But every story they naturally exaggerated to make it a lot more exciting and fun for the audience to watch.
It sounds a lot like Munchausen.
Maybe. Yeah, that's kind of what it brought to mind. I was looking through, I was like, Baron Munchausen, this really fits. But the thing, he had I can't remember what the background is called, but essentially everyone knew who he was. He was famous because of this traveling show. But the problem that he kept running into is that all the stories kind of grew even in the telling, and they were already very exaggerated. So everyone thought that he was like this amazing archmage because he was the guy who was able to run the interplanar ship, when really he was just the person on board who knew anything about anything and could like barely make it function. So he had all these people just assuming that he was going to save the day and just was completely incapable, at least, you know, at the beginning of the campaign. So it became like this really fun comedic relief moment that I got to constantly insert throughout the game, including I created a theme song for the Gnarly Bob Adventure Hour, which was based on the SpongeBob theme.
Oh, no.
Good.
And oh, yeah. Oh, very much, yeah. So you know, they'd walk into a tavern and the bards would recognize him and start up with the Gnarly Bob Adventure Hour theme. Or, you know, people would recognize him and talk about this story like, oh, well, you can save us because you single-handedly fought off Lolf. And, you know, that what this taught me, though, and, you know, the valuable lesson that I got out of this throughout the course of the campaign is that, you know, Out of the Abyss is one of those games where there's a lot of very dark stuff going on, but there's also a lot of interjected points of comedic relief or, you know, Alice in Wonderland references. And so, I, you know, it really drove home that value of comedic relief and how, that's, you know, it underscores, especially in a game that's horror and, you know, you're going through the rot-infested fields of the fungal demon lord. And it's important to occasionally then have a moment where you can laugh.
Yes.
Well, now I have to talk about Habib.
Go for it.
Okay.
And I will actually have something that's related too. This will be good with like a theme going on.
So we did, we didn't do Strahd, but we did a couple of the Adventure League adventures in Ravenloft. And before we started the campaign, we were like, okay, so what are we all going to play? And then somebody, I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to be like a fat Callum Shite slaver. I'm just going to be like a piece of shit, like right out of the Aladdin cartoon show, like terrible human being. And then this Danish guy I played was like, oh, I'll be your slave. So he made this like brutal pit fighter guy, and I made this like sleazy rogue, and he ended up multi-classing into like four different things. He's like a rogue, wizard, fighter, barbarian, something. And I voluntarily lowered his speed because he was just so obese, so he only moved 25 feet around. And this is kind of like the other end of the sword when you're doing horror. Like, it's that was not an appropriate character for a horror game. Mm-hmm. Especially with like a PC as the slave, because like that's just like Abbott and Costello in the party all the time.
Yeah, there's a constant comedy.
yeah. But how did Habib do? I mean, he screwed a couple people over, and then he attempted to lock the party in a barn that had caught on fire after they contracted lycanthropy. And I think he ended up getting lycanthropy too, and now he's just like a fat werewolf rolling around in Ravenloft somewhere.
Well, there we go. Yeah. Headcanon accepted.
And he had a different... Oh, that was the other part of Habib. I just kept giving him names. So his final name was... hold on, it's worth it. It's worth it, I swear.
Better be good. Thanks for the payout here.
Where's Habib? Habib, where's your name, Habib? He's got so many names. Ah, here we go. And this is all incorrect, by the way. This is not the way that the naming conventions work over there. Habib el-Armasari ibn Forsooth ibn Guldesi ibn Rastfara ibn Salim ibn Hisari ibn Kridlier ibn Varsad ibn Laraz ibn Turducken.
Ibn Turducken. Okay, that was... The Turducken was worth the wait.
Yeah.
Good.
Habib.
Good, good.
But my relationship with the guy playing the slave, that actually worked out really great. I thought that was going to blow up in our faces, but like, nah, we were tight.
Fair.
Oh. Them Swedes.
He's a Dutch.
Dutch, okay.
He's from Holland. Them or, Dutch. I don't know. He's fucking Scandinavian.
Them
you know, one of those Scandinavian countries. So, well, speaking of Ravenloft.
Yeah.
I know I discussed last week my warlock Sempronius Daya, who has been cursed to be a good person.
Oh no. How horrible for you.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. He thinks it's awful. And so I am running a second character in that game, and I switch out in combat depending on what we need. And that character is Colette Morin, and she is a professional make sure the wizard doesn't get stabbed too much person.
Hey man, that is a viable like profession in like the Tippyverse.
Yes, yes. Well, the thing is that what is actually going on is that the wizard is actually, like, an elven prince on the run because he was, like, assassinating people to, like, move up onto the throne.
Elfred
Drow. She was his bodyguard. And she's like, dude, if you get caught, they're gonna murder me, too. So, I'm coming with you. and so, let's see. It's been interesting because by class, she's a paladin.
Of course.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so she took the Oath of the Crown because, you know, her family, like, there's always been a Morin for each member of the royal family, and their families go back generations and blah, blah. And so, but the whole point is that she is technically a paladin of Bahamut, Platinum Dragon. Problem is that there's another paladin of Bahamut in the party. And we haven't played very much, so push hasn't come to shove yet, but he's like, I forget what it is, the stereotypical, like, Oath of the Righteous or whatever. Yeah. And he's like the paladin's paladin. He's Love the one that Sempronius is stuck with, who's like diligently trying to rehabilitate this terrible warlock who should not be rehabilitated. And so I feel like, considering that she would choose her oath over her deity, I suspect that at some point she's probably going to turn into a shitty fighter with good saving throws. but, you know, she tanks like a boss, so they can't take that away from me.
I love it.
Yep.
Paladins could be really fun, yeah. I like playing paladins.
Yeah, no, it's been really great, though. Like, smite evil, it's been very fun.
Just remember to always keep a couple points in the lay on hands around. Because you can...
No, that's...
Yeah, you can dish out just one at a time. So, like, I've had characters that pick up paladin level just so, like... Because we don't have a healer, and I'm tired. So I'm just like, okay, I'll take a paladin level, lay on hands, we can continue.
Yep, yeah, that's moving on.
Half the time you do use it.
So, well, we had two paladins and a cleric, and two PCs still went below zero hit points twice in the same combat.
Was that the fault of the party or the encounter?
Well, because our GM rolled, like, all of the 20s on them all of the time, I can only assume she must have taken pity on us.
Oh, dude, there was a Mists of Akuma game the other day. I got to play in it. I didn't have to GM. I got to play in it. And one of the characters in it is these dudes with cannons. And he fucking critted with the cannon, which did like 45 damage or something. What and the samurai hadn't started combat yet. So he did the Iajitsu thing. And then he also poured his smite into it. And he also critically hit. So he just like deflected the bullet by 3 points. It was amazing. It was so good. It was this like perfect anime moment. It's like,
all anyway, right. Scott. So, yeah, Scott, what's...
So, a while back, I'm going to tell a Starfinder story, actually. So a while back, I mentioned, Boomstick, Jericho Boomstick Bugazi, the shotgun-wielding Blitz fighter soldier, Vesk Blitz soldier, who is a live streamer. He live streams his adventure and has the unfortunate battle cry of hands up, don't shoot, and then shooting people. Because he heard it as a child and thought that that's what the cops were yelling as a battle cry. So he's our playtest character we use. So we had too many people log on and playtest with us for our Dragoon thing, which is basically animate armor space marines with a dragon theme to it. Ghost haunted armor space marines, think of it that way. So we had a bunch of them, and we had his buddy, what is it, like, I think it was like I think his name is like 47. He's a human, or he's a robot that self-identifies as human. And so that's it. He's an engineer, so he has the streaming bot. So we had enough people, so we just pulled out them, and the plot of the playtest, such as it was, being a playtest, was devolved into... So last time, he went to this agency and a bunch of goblins attacked, and yada yada, destroyed security bots, etc., etc. This time, he went back to the promotion agency to go ahead and try to get another meeting with these people, and of course, one of the goblins from the last encounter rolled in and said, "You killed my friends," and, like, sets off a bomb. Unfortunately, everyone else went first, and the guy in the power armor with the heavy weapon just nuked the hell out of the goblin, and went off by itself. And then the security bots attacked us and thought we killed everybody, and we had a murderously good time. And the funny thing is, they were all of
and it was all live streamed.
Yes, it was all live streamed by two cameras.
What's the rating on that live stream?
It is not PG-13.
No.
And they spent half the time trying to resurrect NPCs while the player with no way to do so don't have any ranks in medicine. So they were also in there like, "No, live!" Because they're kind of paladin.
No! And Boomstick is just in there like, "Nope!" I saw CCR on TV one time.
Exactly, exactly. And because they're all of different, like, imagine, like, it's called orders. They're like, they're like orders, imagine them, but they're all very thematically different. So, from, like, different branches of the military, and none of them can heal whatsoever, and the security bots just straight up attack us. And that was fantastic. And then we had this thing where we were fighting a bunch of I think they were like they're lizard men, like the V style lizard men.
Oh good.
Like, and one of the NPCs on the thing was named Not a Dragon. And they're like, "I bet you it's a dragon." I'm like, "Well, it's not a dragon." And they killed it.
Not wrong per se.
But we were doing like high level test, like above CR and below CR testing for that. So that was the way above CR thing, so they killed it in, like, one round, and it summoned, like, a young blue dragon, and it's, like, I think CR 9 and 9 or 10 or something, and they're, like, they were, like, level 4, like 4 to 6, I think they were 6. But still,
oh, good.
It was in an enclosed area with a dragon, and you know about how well that ends up. And the only way we could deal damage was by critically hitting.
Mm.
Like, we could deal a little bit of damage, but... The only way to significantly drain HP was to do that, and we ended up defeating it by like 8 crits. But only Boomstick and the it was Boomstick and the Skullwatch Grenadier, I think. Anyway, Boomstick at the end was getting destroyed, and he was just like, "All right, guys, now hit that like and subscribe button. If you want to see me die, go ahead and vote in our thread. It's coming up. I want to see what the voters think. Should I die or should I live? Go ahead and vote." And it's like everyone just like hits the, like all the other players are like typing in like the chat, like hits the like button for that. And then he's like, "You're all sick fucks. I didn't know you wanted to see a snuff film live on YouTube, but it's not going to happen." And then he just gets one rounded and we're like, "All right. Ratings going through the roof, man." So, the legend of Jericho, or was it Boomstick, is good. He is such an under-optimized character. He is so wonderful, and I hope to play test the hell out many more games with him at 6th level until we don't need 6 levels anymore. But
there we go.
So that is the continuing legend of Boomstick.
All right.
No relation to the legend of Korra.
No, not in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, good to know.
Okay, now I'm gonna do this. All right, so next subject is favorite working projects. I've just been in the weeds with Book of Exalted Darkness, so I don't have anything new to talk about, unfortunately. I just spent where was I last week, Savannah? Do you remember I just finished all the continents, right?
Yes, and you were like insisting on naming all of the rivers and mountains.
I do. I am going to still. I just have to go back and do it. And I wanted to go through everyone else's stuff first. And everyone wrote great stuff to you.
I thought you were going to say naming the rivers like something obscene, but I'm like, oh, okay, just writing
them. No, I just got to name them, and there's a shitload of like rivers and forests and glades and all that.
Because Micah does not love himself enough.
I don't. Let me see. What was the highlights?
Luis loves his rivers more.
Ass. He figured out this like dark transformation prestige class that's only 8 levels. So, and this is for 5e2, so it's not like, you know, it's a little weird to do prestige classes. They don't have any. And so you can, there's a way that you can make yourself into like a lich dragon or a rakshasa construct if you are
Steve,
very selective.
Steve, you got to go next. I got something from that werepower book, man.
All right. Yeah. I've got about 15 different stuff going on at any one time.
You know, Mike, are you done? So, Mike, are you done?
Scott, yeah, I'm done. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
As Scott said, he is working on a vampire werewolf book for me through Wright Publishing, which I'm really excited to see what he comes up with. I'm also working on the Fairy Ring Magic Guide. I believe I'm working on that with Savannah. I just turned over a bunch of writing for that. Then there's a bunch of other stuff just through Wright Publishing, like in the Company of Vampires, we're going to do an expansion, maybe turn into a Kickstarter at some point. We're doing in the Company of Valkyries and the Company of Fiends. I've got a cool Demi-Line Outer Planes series that we're working on that should be coming out soon. So, you know, lots of stuff at any one time. I've got a Starfinder adventure path that I'm working on with AEW Games that I'm really, really enjoying getting to work on. That's just been a lot of fun for me. And, you know, it helps me to get a better handle on Starfinder in general, you know, the motivation to really dive into the rules.
So just one thing to comment on that. Mike, you were talking about the various Draco, Lich, this, that, and the other thing. Most of the book is dedicated to the werepire stuff, but there's a section called Other Pyres.
Yeah, yeah. Of course there is.
And it includes a reference to a, I think it was like a Draco pyre, but then it talks about like anthropomorphic things, so like they're like bat things. So it ends up talking about.
Yeah.
I have a parenthetical like in there that talks about, like what would happen if you did it with toucans or a whale or something. So theoretically, you're an anthropomorphic whale vampire or something, or a toucan vampire. Like, it's good.
Yeah, I think we need to also specify that this is probably going to be the first book in a line that's specifically supposed to be, you know, a little out there conceptually, and, you know, having a little fun with the game. And
most,
you know,
of it is vampire. Serious. There's also the reference to the were-toucan.
sure, but yeah, the book will have were-toucans, and that's totally okay.
All right, and it can. I'm standing up a character now, you know.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, you do a one-off, and you just want to play some sort of wacky character. I mean, yeah. It doesn't. You can have a little fun with it, and you can not have to stress out about everything being, you know, so mired in the classics.
Yep. So Savannah, what are you on today?
So there's the Scott Gable and I've been talking, might be doing some development on the magic guide for the Fairy Ring. That sort of thing. I'm not honestly looking to take on a lot of jobs right now. Ideally, I'm going to be on indefinite hiatus after I wrap up all my current projects. Wow. So, see how that goes. Burnout—it's a hell of a drug.
Yep. I have. Let's see. We released Aug, base class Aug. Then we did. We're working on a new alternate path book. We did alternate path Marshall 2. We released that, and we went, man, we're writing all this great content for this potential deity book. Oh, wait, this is definitely all Path Divine 2. Shit. So now we're tossing things together for that. We got a Starfinder module coming up. Pathfinder module, maybe a Starfinder. And yes, Mike, it is the goddamn The Raid, The Raid, but an adventure module. And it's thematically coherent, Mike.
I'm sorry, what's The Raid? What are you talking about?
You've never seen The Raid?
Is that the movie with the District 13 kind of thing, and they gotta go into the...
It's an Indonesian, Polynesian, not Polynesian. It's the Indonesian martial arts film where they go into the, we talked about in the show, where they go into the crime lords like building, and they have to like
fight the one that came out of the District 13, I think, was the sequel, and then they made a sequel.
No, that's different.
It's different.
Yeah, that's the part you're thinking of, the parkour one. This is the like the indie action film from Indonesia that got. District 13 is a French film.
I don't know if I remember seeing this.
Oh my god, you gotta go watch it. It's this crazy kung. It's not kung fu, but it's like kung fu, but if it was like in Indonesia, and they came out with a sequel which is completely unrelated to the first one, except it has the same cast and is like unbelievably good. I sat in a theater watching it myself and felt like such a pretentious asshole watching a foreign film, but it was wonderful and amazing and bloody and gory. And there's a chick who fights with two hammers, and there's a dude who wields a baseball bat like a samurai sword and incorporates the ball into into his martial arts. I don't know, dude.
I'm cool.
But yeah, no, we're writing one of them that's basically you are the lawmen breaking into the Bastion of Baron Baldwin, who is the biggest crime lord in the world and basically owns an entire region, and everyone who's just a criminal gets to chill in his place for free because no one wants to fuck with him. They basically act as bodyguards, and you have to go up the, there's also something called the Doom Elevator in it, which is kind of great.
I'm still playtesting the Escape from Cleveland 2099 thing, but that's going to be Pathfinder and Starfinder. And then if you happen to be playing Starfinder, then instead of being, you know, in Cleveland, it's on some, like, world-blasted moon, and it's just desolate there, and it's all the same,
Neo-Cleveland?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, I mean, Cleveland 2099 is a lot like, you know, Escape from Los Angeles.
Or Escape from New York.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
What's up next?
Stuff that we are not working on and can't profit from that has come out, but is cool, and people should know about.
Let's see, I'll go. We talked about it at one point. It was Red Shirts.
Yeah,
they finally released it. What
comedic Starfinder adventure.
Yeah. If they released the first part of it, it was there's a line in there, I want to see what it is. Yeah. The index included a section called Encounter. Roid Rage Chihuahua is on page 14. And I was like, alright, I'm sold. Nothing else, man. Just
yeah,
that's good.
Pretty solid.
But yeah, it's obviously a comedic Starfinder adventure, and it's in a few parts. I think I wasn't blown away by the formatting. They could probably hire someone better for it. But, I mean, solid content, so give it a look.
All right. Well, I will prop up A Touch of Class, which is available now in print. I didn't write all, like, half of this. I wrote, like, less than half of it, and I don't get any money from it. It's just really good. And if you're looking for cool additional 5e classes, you will find several of them in there. I think the one that stands out is probably the card caster. Yes. And the stuff I wrote is cool, but the card caster is pretty dope, and getting to use a tarot deck at the table is pretty dope. So, got to give it up for that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Savannah, you got anything? While you stitch it yourself.
I was gonna say I am behind myself, so I will pass the baton here.
Weird thing is I'm actually holding the baton in my hand right now, but you can't see it. Like literally.
Jeez, guy, you're such a tease.
It's a really nice baton. Anyway, for you guys who don't know, I'm actually working at a magic and toy company as like the assistant to the CEO, so I have all this magic props and shit in my room right now. And I'm
that's
like,
see,
cool.
We told you that he was kidnapped by magicians.
I
told
am literally,
you.
Despite not being able to do any magic, I am literally professionally a magician's assistant.
I mean, you know, being able to do magic isn't required when you're the assistant, is it?
No, not really. But everyone else.
Have they cut you in
it.
Half yet, or?
No, but I am the guinea pig for all their new tricks because I don't know the first thing about doing magic, so they end up like, all right, try this. And then afterwards, I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. And then they're like, at the end, they're like, all right, well, you're using your pinky there to divide that, and you're doing this and that. I'm like, uh-huh. It was cool. It was magic. There are
I'll believe.
Who used to live in my next to my desk and a rabbit.
Scott's
and
taking
like
his time retraining into sleight of hand.
Seriously, though, they told me they'd teach me. I'm down for it.
Are you, like, distractingly attractive, like, to the point where it helps the magician perform the trick because
God, no.
you're drawing the audience's eye?
I am very intellectually pretty.
They pretty you up. They get some like eyeliner and like what's that stuff? That's all the different colors. Eyeshadow. Some bright eyeshadow to bring
I'm
out
just
your.
I'm just pointing it out there. Everyone looks better with a little bit of eyeliner.
All right, I will make sure to do that. I will go put on that while I sit at my cramped, super tiny desk, dealing with phone service issues.
Absolutely.
What about you, Steven? You got one for everybody to go check out?
Upon looking at the outline again, it looks like the one that I had is a Kickstarter, so I'm happy to hold off on that till later.
Okay.
So,
Pathfinder and Starfinder news and speculation.
Ooh.
Well, I'm speculating that Ultimate Wilderness or whatever it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had a chance to read it.
I have not either.
I've heard some people being sort of side-eye-ish about what is it, the Shape Changer?
Yeah, the Shifter I hear is getting a lot of
something
lot
about of the hawk aspect flat. Getting like 60 feet of blind sense.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And then the bat gets like 20.
I feel like that's got to be a mistake.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So it kind of killed me when that book came out because we were like 2 weeks away from releasing Altpath Primal, which is basically the same book.
Oh no.
So they announced it like it's coming out in a month or two, and we're like, fucking really? All right, well, we're going to release our Shapeshifter class, and god damn it, you put it out. Are you serious? Are you serious? So I'm a little bit harumphy about the book. I'm like, really? Come on. So I may take some time to buy that book. But otherwise,
It is almost impossible to stay ahead of that stuff. I mean, like, it's just a matter of time until it constantly happens.
Well, what my favorite example was before the APG came out, we released a book, or maybe it was right after the APG came out. Which was Anti-Paladin in? Anti-Paladin was in APG, right?
APG.
After APG came out, we worked on an Anti-Paladin book and put out a bunch of archetypes for it. And then was it Ultimate Combat or Ultimate Magic came out, and they were, like, thematically the same ones we put out.
Mm.
But it was totally, it's totally convergent design, but I'm just like...
Suspicious.
No, I understood what it, like, it's like the undead one, the infernal one, you know what I mean? But it was like...
Yeah.
I mean, there are only so many ways that you can be an anti-paladin.
Yeah, yeah. But I was like, you know. I see what you're doing. You're looking over this and copying off my thing.
Warehouse raptors are stalking me.
Yep. We're
ooh,
not gonna...
See, the secret, Mike, is muffins. You have to feed them muffins.
I see.
Hey, I survived in the warehouse for 3 months. I know these tricks.
Take it from Savannah, she knows.
It's true. Got the inside beats.
Savannah, do you feed them popcorn as well? Or is that what a chain is for?
No, this is for my tiny dinosaurs. Well, also for my Christmas tree.
Both are acceptable.
You know, I just got so fond of the warehouse raptors, I had to get some tiny dinosaurs.
So let's move on to 5th edition, Mike.
5th edition news and stuff.
Woo-hoo.
Xanathar's Guide to Everything came out.
Did it finally come out? I know we keep talking. I think we've mentioned it like 5 times.
Yeah, the companion on DM's Guild came out as well. What else? Oh, I didn't realize that there's a Magic the Gathering adventure that came out. Cool.
Yeah, it's called X Marks the Spot, and the image, if you guys want to click on it, is a dinosaur in badass armor. So, a man riding a dinosaur in badass armor. I thought it was a cyborg dinosaur to begin with, or a robotic dinosaur, and I was very disappointed when I realized I don't think it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that would have been more compelling, but I will accept someone riding a dinosaur in badass armor, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Twist your arm.
I guess.
That's great.
Suboptimal.
It's got feathers. That makes me happy.
Okay. Yeah. No, that is fine. They get those points back because it has feathers.
I think it's really funny. What's that image? It's like skeleton doesn't actually tell how like heavy set you were. So you
right.
Don't actually know if dinosaurs were like super
giant
beefy
chicken
or like super skinny. Like they could just be bloated like giant circular things that kind of rolled around more than they walked.
like giant plump chickens.
Yep.
Totally down with that.
Yeah.
Headcanon accepted.
I think, Mike, yep. I think the name of this episode has to be Headcanon Accepted.
Yes.
I'm a little confused about, wait, you're saying that they couldn't have told anything about volume or mass of dinosaurs from their skeletons?
Well, they can tell a certain degree, but it's like mm-hmm. they can't tell with any degree of accuracy the full, like, how much something actually weighed. You tell, like, the max capacity of what something like that with the skeletal structure could support.
Sure, but I mean, we know that sharks and alligators haven't changed, so I feel like we have good examples.
That's what we're basing all the stuff on.
All right.
But I'm saying the thought experiment is, technically we don't have data that proves disproves. It's like, you have to prove the hypothesis and disprove the null hypothesis. We're not disproving the null hypothesis here.
Okay. Yeah. The known unknowns.
Yep.
I was going to say, careful, Mike, you will pry this round dinosaur headcanon out of my cold, dead hands.
anything else?
Something about... I guess it doesn't count for 5e, the Nevermore Tonight stuff.
Go ahead.
Sort of 5e adjacent.
We'll talk about it in the next thing. Looks like they've got some figures for D&D out now again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I hear they're sexy looking.
I guess, they yeah. Look pretty good.
So I know it sounds weird, but like people are like, oh, this is a great mini. I'm like, you know what I want out of a mini? I want to be able to use it for 50 different things. Like, I have a stack of minis that I've been using since like middle school, and I'm pretty sure some of them are made of lead and I probably shouldn't play with them. But no, seriously.
If you don't put them in your mouth, you're probably fine.
Well, I mean, I'm a 5-year-old and I have to put everything in my mouth, damn it.
study the world.
You're a 5-year-old robot.
But yeah, I played the same one since, like, I think they were like my parents, like, for something else, and I just, they were like, oh yeah, we have some of those things. When I didn't have any minis, I'm like, oh, okay, we'll use these. And I'm pretty sure they're like lead based or like something toxic. Like maybe just made of arsenic.
They're just solid arsenic. They're as bonus, they're slightly radioactive.
they're just asbestos like given form.
Yes.
We used to play with these and use them to season our foods. Yum yum. Alright, so do we want to talk about other RPG business before I go into asbestos, you know, induced, you know, rant?
Yeah. Owen posted about roles in the tabletop industry, and you also posted about roles in the tabletop industry.
Yeah, so when you were introducing yourself, Stephen, I actually was like, all right, it's interesting. I was trying to see what title you'd use, because we as an industry, so if you guys don't know my background is, I was, my undergrad is actually in game production, so we actually have like some like academic stuff here, like what are the names of the, I have an MBA and I'm like from game dev, so it always interests me very much to see like the organizational structure of game companies. Mm-hmm. And what titles we use. A lot of them are pretty flat, and we all wear multiple hats. But, like, Stephen, if I had to ask you right now, what would you say that the titles are you use for people at your company?
Project manager, developer, editor, and then we refer to, you know, and then there's writers and designers,
so,
freelancers.
So how do you define developer?
A developer is the person who's setting the content expectations, who's reviewing rough drafts, final drafts, making any sort of final calls on the content, and making sure that mechanical clarity, thematic consistency is kept.
That's actually pretty close. What you said was pretty close to what I had.
Mm-hmm. I think I would add, like, specifically a role similar, and this could be covered in what you said, but a role similar to an editor, but for math.
Yep.
Yes.
I actually wrote it down in the... I broke it down as... it was producer, which is project manager. Developer, which I actually use the same term, which is pretty much what you described. When I use designer, it's like designer, insert thing here. It's kind of what you're talking about with writer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this is a mechanical designer. Their job is to be a mechanic, or like it could even be an editor. Like mechanical editor is a thing, you know, like... So it's like you have something preceding the designer or the editor part of it, because that just kind of works a little bit nicer, I feel like. And everyone wears multiple hats, so it doesn't really matter.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm usually developer and editor, because, you know, as I'm going through, I'll be doing edits to language while also doing edits to mechanics, and it's one's developer, one's editor.
When we had two people, we would edit each other's shit before going out to our external editor. So it's like, Scott, what's your... I got an editor credit once. Yeah! I should not have
Yay!
Actually, that book is pretty well edited, if I can say so myself.
Well, there's you know, the gaming industry editors, and then there's, like, actual legit editors, and there's a I feel like a decent divide between those two skill sets.
I got lucky. I got a guy who has a game dev background, but is a professional editor, and he's also a good buddy of mine. So I lucked out with that. He works at Barnes & Nobles around the all day.
That's an awesome resource for you to have.
I'm never giving out his name. You can never contact him. His name is Ian Sisson. He's fantastic.
I'll just buy a book and look him up.
No. Ian Sisson,
he gets credit, right?
I would love to have Ian Sisson.
Is he edited under an alias?
No. Ian's my buddy. He's on the show. I want to get him on the show, but he's like very, like, I don't want to say antisocial, but he's just like, I don't want to. That sounds like a nightmare to me, being on the air with somebody. So I don't think we got him yet. We got Christos on, but. Let's see. Anything else, Mike?
I don't know. I don't really have anything to say about it.
No. I mean, like, in the other RPG news.
Oh. Specifically RPGs. I can't think of any from the last week that stood out. But like I said, I've been kind of in the weeds. So no. Let's move on.
And away.
Other media of interest. Before I forget, I do have something here. The Neverwinter Nights, they're retooling Neverwinter Nights over at Beamdog, which I'm super excited about, because Neverwinter Nights is fucking amazing.
Yeah, man. I played them forever. Reminds me of, like, Neverwinter Nights and Dungeon Siege were, like, my crack for a while.
Yeah. I hope that the online community for Neverwinter Nights kicks off again, because, like,
yeah, man.
There were people who set up servers for, like, all of Men's of Bronzen and stuff, and, like, oh, that'd be dope. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that. And then you have other stuff to talk about.
Yeah, so Disney bought Fox. That's a thing. It's a big thing.
That's a thing, all right.
So, one thing that I noted early on is, so this gives them a controlling stake at Hulu. Like, it was divided.
Oh.
If you guys don't know, Hulu was basically created by a bunch of the big studios to be their streaming service as a neutral meeting ground, almost. So
not anymore, huh?
So it was like Disney, Fox, ABC, and I forget who else. Maybe Paramount. Anyway, the with the merger, it gives them a controlling share. And in 2019, Disney is launching its own media platform that's combining all of its existing ones.
Right.
So the question is, are they going to poison the shit out of it, or are they going to, like, divide their content on it? And the answer from Disney seems to be a very, very vague, non-committal, well, we're probably going to put more adult-oriented content on Hulu and more kid-oriented, or at least family-oriented, or at least not expressly adult-oriented content on their own platform.
Hmm.
But I don't know. And they spun off some of Fox's TV properties, so they'll probably be on their own thing. But yeah, they could totally tank it now if they want.
Oh, yeah.
It also means, hey, guess what?
There's the motivation.
Yep.
Who owns Crackle?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure that I know what Crackle is.
It's another streaming
service. Yeah, I don't either.
They had Seinfeld on it for a while, but they also have a Super Mansion, which is like the Robot Chicken guys made their own Justice League, and Bryan Cranston. I love Super Mansion. I thought it was funny.
I watched the pilot, and I'm like, this is so trite and, like, overdone, and, like,
you were upset about the Batman character, I think.
No, I don't fucking care about that.
Okay.
Dude,
I give them points for the name.
No, I thought it was. It's like every joke was just like clever. Was like not clever. It's like every joke I saw coming a mile away. I'm like, okay, cool, yeah, It's the same joke 50 times. Got it.
What did you expect? It was the Robot Chicken people.
I mean, here, the thing with the Robot Chicken
people,
like,
walking in there.
Yeah.
It was a skit show, though. Like, if it's a 6-second joke, ha, okay, cool, that's funny. and like you got some creativity, but it's like you gotta sit with the same skit. It's like a Robot Chicken skit.
No, it's that just strung along like the backbone of like old Silver Age comic tropes.
Yeah, but like it's like a Robot Chicken that like 6 second skit that went on for 60 minutes by accident.
Oh, it didn't go on for 60 minutes.
So about Patreon.
Mike, I hear you have strong opinions on this.
I don't. I just don't. I've never had a Patreon because I don't feel comfortable with the model. So I don't have one.
I was thinking about starting one before all of this nonsense, and now I'm pretty sure I'm not going to.
Yeah, apparently they rolled back the whole like fee addition because there was so much backlash and so many creators leaving and all that. So
something weird about Patreon. Do you guys know Pomplamoose? It's like a band. Yeah. It's on YouTube. Gorgeous type music. Go check product. It out. One of the guys who is in that actually started Patreon, or one of the founding members of Patreon, Jack Dante. He's on that letter. He wrote that letter that said, like, we're rolling everything back. But it's kind of weird that a YouTube creator made it. But we have a Patreon. We don't use it for much. We have a weird model we set up, which is like, hey, look, give us at least $5. It's basically a pre-order for everything, and you'll get every product we put out, with the exception of like a Kickstarter or something. And if it's below 15 pages, you get it for free. And we can basically use that as a like art budget for small books. Like, hey, we're gonna get $50. All right, I'll put $50 towards art for this little, you know, book. And guess what? We're gonna go out, you know, or $100 towards art or whatever it is. We never get a lot of traction on it. I mean, it's probably, I think we're at like $50 or something a book, which is, it's not bad. It's like, hey, I get an extra $50. So we do posts.
Well, it seems like it provides a very valuable service to an awful lot of artists that, you know, are depending on it for a significant chunk of their income. It's just, you know, this kind of pounds home the point that we need to kind of figure out a backup plan in case they pull this sort of malarkey again.
Which is unfortunate because Patreon is a backup plan for some people already.
Yeah.
Because I know YouTube creators, like when the whole demonetization stuff went out, they're like, yeah, no, like if we were just relying on YouTube, we couldn't do this anymore. So that Patreon link.
I support a few of those, yeah. Another thing related to that was they had... It's called gif.party, and I swear to God, it's not a porn site.
I don't believe you.
Go type it in.
No. Gif.party is a site where people have been like stealing people's Patreon shit and posting it there.
My money is that it began as like one of those furry illustrator sites, because I understand there's a huge market for that.
There's a lot of very adult content on the site right now. That's what they get targeted as most. And it's really,
I don't know that for a fact. It's just, if I had a bet.
Like, it seems likely. Yeah, I know. It's a good theory.
There's a lot of different weird things. There's a thing called Hatreon for Nazis.
Really?
Yeah.
And okay. Then
Kickstarter's starting thing. Yeah, I think Chris Cantwell got like $10,000 for his legal defense through that. That was the jackass in Charlotte. And then, Kickstarter is starting one soon called D.RIP, so drip.
Yeah.
Which I might be interested in, but we'll see.
I don't know. I always feel salty about Patreon because whenever I applied to college back in 2010, they're like, okay, what's your ambition? You know, what's your bigger picture thing? And basically, and this was to the scholarship board and all this. And basically, my pitch was Patreon. And then, like, you know, obviously not gonna get this done immediately. 2013 Patreon happens, and it's just like, well, damn it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I guess that had merit for someone else.
Okay. Well, does anybody have any other parting thoughts on Patreon?
Go support ours. No, I'm kidding.
We might have one so we can pay for hosting the podcast somewhere, but someday maybe we'll figure it out. If anyone has suggestions for a Professional Goblins Patreon, we want to hear them, so
yes, email us
or message us or something. We were going to talk about The Punisher. That's right.
Other media of interest.
So I really liked it. My only caveat and spoilers, everyone. Did you, I don't want to ruin it for you, Steven. Did you see The Punisher? Are you going to watch it?
I'm about two-thirds of the way through. I think I'm in the same boat as Scott.
Okay. Well, I won't ruin the end for you guys. I thought there wasn't enough like gruesome gangster killing. Like, what the fuck? This is The Punisher. Like, there were like 13 dudes he killed in the first episode that were gangsters. And then he like rolls around knocking people unconscious and like shooting them in the foot. Like, fuck that. Like, The Punisher should be dunking people into chrome machines. Like, what the fuck?
So I'm going to give a, like, I enjoy it. There's a butt kind of thing. I am not the person this was aimed at. I like my superheroes pulpy. I like them with powers. I like them to do the thing. And I always feel like Punisher is really, really interesting when he's put in contrast to other superpowered individual, because he's literally the.
That can be very interesting. I'll certainly admit that.
And I felt like
when he beat the Hulk. That was the best.
I feel like they missed a huge opportunity, and this ended up just being a really overly violent, if not like Mike said, not as bloody.
It should be way bloodier. And how this is the first season, man. Like, you know, they intend to do more than one season.
No, I got it. But the other series, like, this isn't even his first appearance, though. I mean, we had him with Daredevil, and like,
no, but he was hanging out with Daredevil, competing with a superhero, like he wanted.
Fine, I thought that was kind of interesting, and then.
But like, to set the tone for the character and his story, like, you need to do that before you.
I got it, but like, my favorite scene with him is with the Runaways. Molly Hulkling with super strength, just like she gut punches him and he nearly dies because she's like, I thought he had superpowers, and this adorable little girl.
Whoops.
And she's like crying, apologizing.
I'm really liking Runaways.
What?
I said I'm really liking Runaways. That's been a lot of fun so far. I agree with everything you guys are saying about The Punisher. It seems as though they're trying really hard to set up a larger story and really create a foundation for it. And they really did try to pound home the violence in the first episode. Then it kind of flagged off. But maybe that's just where they're going to get back to it later on. Or they're you know, using this as an opportunity to introduce all these characters that can then later on grow into something more.
Yeah, like Iron Fist.
I'm worried that we're not going to get to see like proper Frank Castle bloodbaths, which is upsetting.
One thing I will note is I like the way it depicted, you know, military life and the effects of PTSD and whatever. That worked out very well. They handled that very. I mean, if anything, the Netflix series are really good at dealing with. It's addressing the kind of elephant in the room in terms of social issues.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe that's why they backed off of the gun violence.
I was just thinking, they're like, probably don't want to have a bunch of him like just like gruesomely destroying people, and then like cut to your dude with PTSD.
And you know, he's going after a lot of people who are in the military or ex-military, and he's got a really
they justify him being non-violent, not killy violent anyway.
They're just doing their jobs. I don't want to kill someone who believes he's doing the right thing.
And that's how I kill bad guys too. But like, where were you killing the bad guys, Frank? Where and when? Why did you stop? Like,
I don't know. It felt like an action movie rather than a superhero movie or show. You know what I mean?
He's not a superhero. That's good.
I understand, but he sits in a superhero universe next to superheroes doing the superhero thing.
And that what makes him cool is that he's just this crazy motherfucker with guns.
And I love that about him.
He's the Batman character. He just runs around with people.
I think the best Punisher thing that I've ever seen, and I really like the 1980s one with Dolph Lundgren, but like the best one was the short where they got the guy, Thomas Jane, I think it was, or an incredibly good lookalike.
No, it was.
And he just like goes to the laundromat.
Yeah.
That was the best. I think it's just called Dirty Laundry.
Yep.
And like that was perfect quintessential Punisher. I think it ends with him giving the Punisher shirt to some kid.
Yeah.
And then like, cool. Then like.
See, I enjoyed that. But to me, again, it was mostly personal preference. I'm like, that was a good TV show for somebody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Though I have to say, speaking of the, you know, I only kill bad guys. Last night I listened to an audiobook of Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to put forth the James Bond's definition, well, the people in James Bond's definition of evil is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, what is it?
Okay.
So, for those of you who have seen Casino Royale, you know that there is a torture sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Involving a wicker-seated chair. Mm-hmm. And that is, in fact, in the book. And so afterwards, you know, once it's all over, like, it does address the fact that, like, obviously Bond is, you know, having some trauma over this, mental and physical. And so he talks to his friend, who's also an agent, and is like, dude, I think I'm gonna retire, because when I almost died, I realized I liked being alive, so I think I'm going to escape. And he's like, well, no, I mean, you talked about how you've only ever defeated, like, two monsters in your career. Well, look at this guy. He tried to turn you into a eunuch. Now that you've seen what true evil is, don't you want to get out there and do the thing? It's like, so we're basing, like, global evil on what he did to one man's junk. Like, I'm not saying it was a nice act. I'm not saying it was justified. But like,
perspective, come on.
Hey, man.
Low bar.
Hey, man, masculine security can go a long way.
I guess, but it's like, this guy wasn't even doing anything, like, horrid. It was the whole, like, oh, he embezzled, and now he's trying to make it up while gambling, and so now 007 has to out-gamble him so that he can't pay back the money to the Russians. Because the Russians could do something with it over there.
Yeah, something.
You don't
something,
even know what something. The Russians are doing to dicks, man.
Wait, what are they doing to Richard Grayson? One moment.
That is an interesting way to consider, like, global power dynamics. Is like,
Grandma, are you talking to me?
What's the worst thing you guys have ever done to a dick?
Grandma,
I'm on air. We judge society's morality by their treatment of penises.
I mean, it is a measurement, I suppose. I don't think it's very unbiased, but you know.
Isn't that the thing? Is that you? That you judge morality by, like, the prison systems. So this would just be like a
society should be judged.
A slight twist on that theory. By the way that you torture dicks.
Yes, that is the answer.
I think it's like some Navajo tribe that had this thing called the Sundance, where basically they suspended you by your dick for like a day.
I step away for 10 seconds. I feel like they come back to this.
That was voluntary, though, right?
I mean, like, yeah, that was voluntary. That's true. Yeah. That's voluntary. But, like, you're out there, hey, that's a painful experience. I mean, eventually, at some point, that you'd have to pass out or whatever. But, like, baking in the sun, too, like, oof. That's just, like, extra injury. And then the sunburn effect afterwards would have to be horrible. So, like,
you know, I'm never going to see the Sundance Kid the same episode? Way.
Are we naming this episode testicular torture?
I mean,
yes, that is the answer.
Global power dynamics and penis mutilation might be a better.
And Steven, what have you brought out in us? I would say
I
we don't normally go down
either of those.
I would say we don't normally go down this path, but I think we kind of do. Different paths, different.
We
paths.
Definitely.
All right. Well,
we haven't even played Munchausen though. It's already our thing.
All right, so I think the next one is Kickstarters, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So the one
I was listing, I found it interesting because their tagline was game-changing dice, and I feel like that's overselling it.
I commented on this shit. Go ahead.
Oh no, I think it's overrated. What do you guys overstated? What do you guys think?
I'm
just
curious
different
to know
counting
what the...
conventions. That's it.
Yeah. What is it? Can you give me the? Yeah,
hold on. There's a. I'll put it in the
picture view.
There you
go. I can't pull it up here.
All
right. Mike,
that's ridiculous.
Mike, I can't pull it up. I mean, today.
Oh, sorry.
It sounds like a really, really strong.
It's just like tallies and asterisks and shapes instead of just straight up dots or numbers.
But they also do dots.
Yeah, it's just alternative counting. Solutions on your dice.
And they are stainless steel and brass.
So what's the benefit that they're trying to? What's their case?
I think their case is that we count the numbers differently. Like that's all I got.
Okay.
Out of that.
Yeah, I remember.
I think I'm with
else.
You.
Yeah, so I remember yelling about something else, not this, but another person was like game changing miniatures, and they were talking about how your game and your narrative in the video, they're like, that your narrative will change because of the way you use these miniatures and this, that. It was the one we reviewed with the hands, that like the magnet hands, remember?
Oh.
And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. So this is like round two for me, like, are you kidding me? These dice are going to change the way I play games, the way I interact with my game experience. The people at my table will like or dislike me more based on the dice I use for this. What?
Like, that's just fun weird fact, that might change your experience, because if you play at a place with a really nice table and you start rolling metal dice, that will change your experience.
Yeah.
But it's like, you can mix stainless steel and brass in the same game as well. The possibilities are endless.
It's strong marketing for sure.
It is that. I will give them that. If someone could type that with a straight face,
dude, I worked in marketing for a few years. They can.
Ugh.
This is written as like par for the course, dude. I once got.
I would have a really tough time. With it, yeah.
I had a guy at one point. Write. I think it was another developer. Sent me a message, and they were like, "The reason I don't like you is because you write, like a braggart speech or something when you write your answers." And I was just like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Like, I wrote exactly what's in the thing. I didn't like be like, "This will change your life forever." I'm like, I don't know. It's pretty cool. It can do this, that, and the other thing. Why don't you buy this product? And he was like, I don't like you because you don't basically. It's like, I wrote like a little bit of a narrative to like one thing. And he was like, how dare you? I'm like, yes, how dare I? It's ad copy. Yeah, fuck me, right? Just.
That's really stupid. But isn't it fun how like those are the comments that really stick out in your mind for the rest of your life?
And it was not a PM from another 100 developer.
Positive ones.
Yep. Oh no, dude. Crazy. Like I'm sure that we've gotten like compliments on shit. I just do not remember any of them. But So you didn't technically put the period after the number of skill points this class had, and all the other ones in. I'm like, fucking god damn, really.
Son of a. Like, it haunts you.
It does. And I did get that in a review once.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten things much like that.
Like,
I think last week for, what is it, one umlaut. The umlauts in one name were not consistent throughout the book. Some of them were angled and some of them weren't, or something. Jeez. And I think I was just like, fuck you, Germany. I don't even fucking care. Are you fucking serious? You think I was talking about a different schemer? Like, really? There's only one schemer in the book.
There's so many of them.
Like, yeah. I don't have the patience for it. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Apparently it worked on some people because they their goal was $1,000 and they have made $8,000 with 28 days to go.
Strong marketing works. So, you know, you can't be like too irate with them. You know?
My favorite Kickstarter I think I've ever seen was there's this one this guy was going to, and it was like written like a History Channel special, and it was like, I will reveal all the UFO information in that we've been asking for, the MK like Ultra stuff and this, and the guy was dead 100% serious, like he has websites he's been managing for like decades and stuff, and you know how much he
that's
wanted
awesome
for it?
Though
how much how he much? Wanted for it yes
$100
keep going.
$10,000.
Higher.
$100,000.
Higher.
$1,000,000.
Yes, he wanted $1,000,000.
$1,000,000.
And I was, and like people were like commenting, like, dude, I'll give you $5-$10 for this. Like, put it down to a reasonable rate, and like we'll actually do it. And he's like, no, this is what I need to protect my identity after.
Like, to release this, I'm burned. I got to move out of the country.
That's what he's basically saying. We're like. Dude, you have your address on your site.
I need retirement money.
For nothing less will I divulge the secret I know.
But see, if there really is like a crazy government conspiracy out to kill people like that, as soon as he starts the Kickstarter experience, like he's done. Like he's never getting that $1,000,000, even if he could raise
the money. The dude has like, his address on his website. Has his physical address on his website. You know, like... Like, yeah, you can't beat that.
You really needed that help too, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, conspiracy theorists.
Oh, conspiracy theorists.
So, I think this part of the show, unless you guys have another Kickstarter.
I got...
I wanted to plug real quick the Creature Codex by Kobold Press for 5th Edition Monsters, just because, you know, I do a lot of work with Kobold Press, and everything they do is quality, and you know, I have the Tome of Beasts on my shelf, and it's awesome, so, you know, I'm sure that is a worthy Kickstarter to back. If you need more 5th Edition Monsters, and who doesn't need more 5th Edition Monsters?
It's true.
So, Mike, do you have...
I was going to get my art stands from Jump Pack 6 or Rocket Pack 6. I should know this. They're the people who did the D&D books. Jetpack 7, that's the name of their company. But anyway, at Gen Con, I got huge art stands because they couldn't fit them into their luggage. And I was driving a van. So like, I just took them. Yeah. So they're doing another one. Their last one was Gods and Goddesses. And this one is Masters and Minions. It's got another, well, here's the Codex one that he was talking about for folks in the Twitch room. And then Masters and Minions is this one. They are funded. They got 15 days left. They do great stuff. Beautiful artwork. They're nice people. And yeah.
All good things.
It's supposed to be a bunch of like villains and then their lackeys.
This is so, art. And this is art?
No, it's a whole book. It's just it's the same artist studio that did the core books.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it'll have like orc warlords and then their orc lackeys and so on and so forth. And that's all I got.
So I think the next section, Steve, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Whatever you want to talk about, what topic is just burning in your mind as the thing you have to talk about? But I'm going to add a caveat. It cannot involve testicular torture at all.
Well, now you're
at all? Like, not even tangentially?
No, not even testicular torture adjacent.
Argo is awful.
You're being so prudish, Scott.
I know. What can I say? I'm a sensible young man.
Well, something that has been on my mind a lot recently, and this will be the first public time I've talked about it. About 2 months ago, I was clinically diagnosed with ADHD, and you know, it's apparently something that I've been suffering my whole life, and it's been causing me a lot of problems. So, you know, I've just recently started going on medication and like actually learning a lot about ADHD. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
The medication is helping me a lot, as I understand it. The medication helps a lot of people, and it's I didn't really understand anything about it until I was told that I had it. And, you know, went in and took a bunch of tests and stuff. And it is, you know, it's one of those like weird things where a lot of people think that it's a myth or that it's just an excuse to get uppers so that you can study all night in college or, you know, sell them around to people. And I, just from my limited experience, I have to say that it's very real. It's something that just makes a lot of sense for me. And I think that, you know, if you think that there's even a chance that you might have it, just go online, check out some information on it, and really consider getting in and talking to a clinical psychologist or a doctor to try to get some treatment for it.
So when I was a kid, I was diagnosed with ADHD combined type. I know it's one of those really overdiagnosed things in kids, but I, you know, it was there and it was confirmed when I was in, you know, as a teenager and whatnot from a psychologist. I went on medication for a while. I tried a bunch of different things, and it didn't really work out so good for me.
It's like 20% of people, as I understand it, it doesn't work very well for.
It just puts me in a fog. It was just not good. So I have to develop some techniques to. And I've discussed them in the past on the show on how to kind of combat it. And it won't say it's an asset, but you can learn some stuff. When I was doing my grad program, it was the hardest thing in the world. I was like actually looking for like nootropics and stuff to like try to like get myself to focus, because it's like, all right, here's what your brain does not want to do. How do you get it to do it? One of the tricks I always use is I have songs that I'll listen to that I've listened to 100 times, and I will loop that song.
Yeah, same here.
It'll be a 3-minute song or something, and I'll do like YouTube repeat, and it'll be like, you've listened to the song 200 times, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. But it helps me keep focused on different things.
Yeah. it did just varying strategies to I've done all these, figured out all these like coping mechanisms over the course of my life, just to help me focus without ever realizing what I was trying to combat. I always thought there was just like this dozen different character weaknesses that I had that there is just no way that I could ever fix, and that I was just going to hit a wall eventually. And just finding out that it's all one thing, and I can learn like actual strategies that have been developed by people who really understand, you know, how the brain works, like exactly what you're saying, or like listening to podcasts while I'm doing chores just helps a lot, because it engages that part of my brain that would normally just be bored to freaking tears doing the dishes.
So I have what I call my external brains. If I'm talking to someone and there's a topic I need to remember, I put out one finger. So it ends up being this, I'll be walking around with one finger out. I'm like, why do I have one finger out? Oh, because of the other tangential thing. Got it. Or I take super extensive notes. Like I have a notepad in like one of these yellow ones from Staples, and I'll fill up like 2/3 of it in like in a month. Like I'll go through almost 100 pages in a month. I just keep notes at work, like, gotta do this, gotta do that. And I have a system of like checks and dashes that I use to keep track of the order of those things. Also priority lists. But yeah, there are lots of techniques out there that you have to kind of learn to cope with. And a lot of times I thought I keep sometimes forgetting, going, oh yeah, this is just a thing for me. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a thing for a lot of people, and they use them. People talk about the fidget spinners and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like the fidget spinner, but I do have fidgets. Like I said, right now I'm twirling a baton around constantly. But yeah.
It feels like a lot of parallels to, like, you know, oh, finding out that you've had long-term major depression or long-term anxiety, or like, oh, hey, you know, I'm on the autism spectrum or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was
also diagnosed with general anxiety and dysphoria, which is a type of long-term depression, comorbid with the ADHD. Essentially, the ADHD was making me anxious and depressed all the time.
That sounds about right.
but you know, like the medication is helping with those things just in general too. And just, you know, figuring out tailored coping strategies, like putting everything into my calendar and everything into my notes and phone and stuff is helping a lot.
One thing,
I think I was just overconfident before.
One thing I found was one of the reasons I got into production management and a lot of those organizational techniques was because I was so lacking them. That when I started developing them and going, oh yeah, you just organize it like this, and then you remind yourself to do this, and you set this organizational thing, and you can set like a milestone here, and you have an auto update from your assembler and your whatever, people are like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, this is what I have to do to get through the day.
Right.
And they're like, really? I'm like, yes, my brain doesn't work like yours, but so I'm just going to apply my brain to your team, my coping mechanism. It's going to overcompensate for what you guys are doing, but you don't know you need it. And the team brain, which is really dumb because it's a team brain, needs it. So it's weird that we both found ourselves.
That's a really cool perspective,
you know?
Dover Cook in the Twitch chat says that everything that you are saying makes sense to him. So congratulations.
That's good. I think there's a ton of stigma about like talking about it and finding coping mechanisms and going on medication and that sort of thing. It kind of like blew my brain whenever someone put it. It's like, you know, okay, I wear glasses. You know, could I operate without them? Well, yeah, I could, you know, look at things like this, and I could get someone to drive me everywhere, and I could get used to cracking my shin on literally everything. But why would I do that? Why would I not just put on glasses and, like, help fix the problem? And, like, medicine isn't, like, you know, it's not a miracle cure, it doesn't work overnight, but, like, it's an option. It's a perfectly valid option.
It just makes it easier to figure out things that are going to work. And like, for example, I have a really tough time talking to people. I have a really tough time doing podcasts and stuff like this, but you know, talking to people on the phone is something that becomes really difficult to me, but you know, the medication just makes it easier to do that, or to, you know, to motivate myself to do it.
One thing that I'll say is the elephant in the room is overdiagnosis. Yes, there is overdiagnosis right and left, but I'd rather have 10 people be overdiagnosed than one person be underdiagnosed for this. Mm-hmm. It doesn't manifest itself in the same way. If you look at the literature, there's lots of different things.
Right.
That's why I mentioned ADHD combined type.
Yeah, that is also what I am.
Yeah, and it's varying degrees. It's a spectrum. It's not like everyone is severe and no one is. It's like either on or off. It's its own thing. But overdiagnosis is not good, but it's the lesser evil. But overmedication is. Again, do not self-diagnose and say, I have this thing.
Right.
You can act on that as your basis. Go, I think I have this thing.
And then go see a professional who is capable of diagnosing you.
You need a professional to do this. You can't be like, yeah, I totally have this. I'm going to go self-medicate, and that's going to be a really terrible... You're going to have a bad time.
I mean, it can be a bad time when a professional is the one, like, giving you your dosages. Self-dosage. No.
Mm-hmm. Bad.
No. Well, and, you know, the process of getting clinically diagnosed is difficult. I mean, it costs money. It required 5 hours of testing and, like, 3 different meetings with a psychologist. Mm. So, I mean, like, it's a process, but, you know, it's necessary to have that hurdle so that you avoid, you know, people being... Like, you know, everyone who's like, oh, I have OCD, when they probably don't have OCD. You're just, you know, you like to clean. It's there's a slight difference between that and one and the other.
All right. Steve, I think that just about wraps up where we want to be tonight. Yeah, so are we, thanks for coming on. That was a blast. It was good to talk to you about that last subject, too.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate coming on and happy to come back anytime you guys need a... Need somebody to fill in, or, you know.
We can be serious. We don't just talk about dick torture.
I mean, we do, but...
yeah, but not only. We can be legit.
Mike, any...
And, clues? You know, if you think about it, historically, a lot of torture tools are like, very much about the phallus.
That's fair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess our next book is going to be a collaborative effort between all 4 of us. It's called Dick Torture of the 16th Century, Rules for Torturing in Pathfinder.
No.
I
phallic torture and global power dynamics.
I can see that.
Could we do it for 5e? Because my warlock specifically has torture's implements.
Yeah.
And I want to get the most out of them.
I do have rules for torture, but not for dick torture.
That's it. We have torture rules too. I think that we can kind of put our heads together and come up with something. And with that wonderful note, guys, thanks for coming to join us. See you in the future. Maybe we will be better, but probably not.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.